you got to follow your heart. And you have to believe in yourself.
Yeah. And be confident in who you are and what your decisions are.
And be okay with it.
And be okay with it. And put your damn heels on and walk. Everybody, welcome back to Hustlin' in Heels podcast. This is Stacy,
and I'm Kaylee,
and we're so glad you're joining us again. We love that you decide to spend an hour a week with us, whenever that is. If it's a Wednesday morning while you're getting your makeup on, or if it's Thursday night after you've tucked the kids into bed, whenever that is, thank you so much. And thank you for those of you who are continuing to share our podcast and liking and subscribing. And we got a couple more reviews this week, so that was pretty awesome.
We are over 10,000 listens total, actually.
Nice.
So I thought that was kind of a milestone.
We like it. That's cool. I mean, we'd like more. Well, so if each of you could just share us with three of your friends, you know, I don't know, help a sister out or something, that'd be great. Mm-hmm. Because we like growing our tribe, because when we do that every week, we hear from more of you, and it's so cool to get your comments and to get your messages and to get all the stuff that you guys do. So anyways, thank you so much for being listeners. We just want to make sure that we're saying thank you. There are dogs barking in the background, and that's going to make more sense in a little bit, but it's kind of strange that they're barking in the background.
Coincidence.
Because they never do. But so anyways, how's your week been?
Good.
Yeah.
It's Thursday. What?
I know.
But tomorrow's Friday, so that's good. Actually, I was off work on Monday. Yeah. I did St. Patty's Day in Chicago. So
atta
girl.
I
experienced the Green River. It was awesome. So much fun. What I have discovered is the older that I get, I can't go all day. So I'll day drink and that's fun. And then it's like 10 p.m. I'm like, okay, so when are we going to go back to the hotel? Like, I'm kind of tired.
Bedtime.
And my friends are like, what? We're in Chicago. I'm like, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Where's some coffee?
I'll stay out, I guess. Yeah, I'll just be over here snoozing at the
bar. We compromised. I stayed out a little later than I normally do, but not as late as they wanted to, you know.
Well, I mean, it's
Chicago.
It was fun. St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
So got to stay out a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So what, how's your week been?
It's been good. It's been good. I had just a fantastic leadership training today with the Disney Institute. And I went into it. You know, I've been to a lot of leadership trainings. And it's Disney, though. Like, Disney does everything right. And it was just fantastic. Like, a lot of the stuff that they talked about, I thought was the stuff that I was proud of that our institution was already doing. Talking about values and really living those values. So I loved that. And I loved talking about that. But the coolest part is if you answer questions, they give you little toys. So I got a Tinkerbell, and it was pretty cool.
That is cool.
A lot of people from our financial institution got some toys, so that means we were rocking it. So anyways, it's always good to, like, go back and re-energize and figure out, all right, are you doing the right things as a leader? What do you need to be doing better at? And there's always that portion of the training session where they really tell you to kind of, like, focus internally, and I just think that that's a good thing to do. And in our hustle and bustle, we don't find enough time to do that. So listeners, if you haven't really introspectively looked at what are the qualities that you think are important as a leader, and are you living those qualities, it's a good exercise. So that was pretty cool.
That sounds cool.
It was fun.
I love that they give toys instead of candy.
Oh,
I feel like,
gosh,
a lot of times candy is just, like, easy.
You don't know how badly, like, people wanted these toys.
Oh, yeah.
And so, and
a room full of adults.
It was ridiculous, but whatever works, man. Whatever works. Positive reinforcement. So we're drinking some red wine tonight. We are drinking some J. Laure Paso Robles Cabernet Sauvignon. And it's from Seven Oaks. I don't know where that is, but I do know where we got this from. Where did we get it from?
Mr. Matt Malone.
Mm-hmm.
It's from California.
Thanks, Matt Malone from 97.5 Y Country, our guest a couple of weeks ago, who brought us this wine, and I made fun of him and I said he regifted it, but then he corrected me and said he actually purchased it at a charity event. So it's not a regifting. He bought it for us. So Thank you, Matt. We really appreciate it.
I'd like to believe he was actually thinking specifically about us when he bought this at that charity.
I'm sure he was.
We'll go with that.
Yeah. We're not drinking it alone this week, even though it was just the two of us last week. This week, we do have a guest again, so I'm going to let Kaylee introduce
her. Yes, we do. So if you are in Southwest Michigan, you have probably seen this hustler out and about, probably with a furry friend or two. We have Jill Svoboda with us from the Humane Society of Southwestern Michigan. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
Welcome to Hustlin' in Heels. We are so excited that you are officially part of the tribe now. So
delighted to be here.
And can I just say, Jill is the first one to be drinking wine from our Hustlin' in Heels wine glasses.
I really like this glass.
Isn't it nice?
It is very nice. And I really love your guys' logo. And I think it looks great.
Yeah.
So Shane, once again, we really don't thank you enough. Shane with Put Them in a Song. You killed it with the logo, the artwork, our music.
All of it.
We really don't thank Shane enough.
No, thank you, Shane.
Yep. Thanks, Shane. So now we've called out Mike and Shane.
Yeah. Bobby, you too. I mean, you know you're going to be real sad if I don't say your name in this podcast. So thank you, Bobby, for all that you do for the studio that we are, mm-hmm. the air that we breathe, Bobby. Appreciate that.
He is a kind of a big deal.
Kind of a big deal. So let's talk to Jill a little bit.
Yes.
So Jill, give us the spiel. Who are you? What do you do?
I'm with the Humane Society of Southwestern Michigan. I have been there since 2008, and I'm super excited because we have a brand new building that we've been working a really long time on, and we should get the keys really soon here. So
that's so exciting. Yes. Every time I drive by that building, number one, the color choice. Fantastic.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Wait until you see the inside.
Oh, man.
I can't wait.
I mean, the color, it's awesome. It's a building that you notice. It is very appealing to look at, and it's in a great location.
Thank you.
So, yeah, you did well. You done good, girl.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to make sure that it wasn't just a box. I've seen a lot of animal places that are just boxes. I wanted to make sure that ours had something mm-hmm. homey attached to it. So
it does look homey.
I'll give you a little secret. That red thing on the front, it's supposed to be a doghouse. So now you're going to look at it completely different when you drive by. So,
I will.
So the next time you drive by, see if you could see my vision of a doghouse there.
I will.
I fought really hard for that.
Nice.
They wanted to take it away from me, but I said, no, no, no.
No, no, no. Don't you know I'm a hustler? Yeah. Put that red thing up there.
Yep.
This damn thing's a doghouse.
Yeah, it is. I wanted everybody to walk through the dog. We're all in the doghouse.
We are. Yeah. We are. So you have been with the Humane Society for a long time.
Yeah, 2008.
It's really sad to me that that's now 10 years ago because mm-hmm. 2008
You're
just
telling
seems...
me. You're telling me.
What brought you there? So how did you get into this?
It's kind of a crazy story. I was really just in the right place at the right time. I went to Western to be a teacher, did that for a while, taught in Benton Harbor, and then... It's just crazy. I was just in the right place at the right time. And there happened to be a board member, and they weren't happy with who was there before. And they asked me what I was doing, and I said, yeah, I'm teaching school. And I thought it would be fun.
So you popped from teacher into executive director?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that happens.
Yeah.
Totally. Like every day.
You got to be a hustler to make that
right.
happen.
Yeah.
Because at first I was just an interim, like, you know, that's how they referred to me. I was just an interim shelter director. That's what they called me at first. Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, you know.
Here you are.
But, you know, nonprofits are different. So it literally was board members like throwing keys at me and saying, figure it out. I mean, there was really nobody to show me. You know, there were some employees there.
Sure.
But they didn't really understand the aspect of the business. I mean, obviously they knew how to take care of the animals and clean them, but they didn't know what it took on the business side to keep it going and to put us in a positive light. And, you know, so it was really hard at the beginning to basically take a organization. We only had $8,000 in the bank account when I started. And now we have a very healthy mm-hmm. balance sheet.
Well, yeah, I mean, you just put up a new building.
Yeah.
So that's a testament alone.
That's separate from having to keep the mm-hmm. current place going. So, so.
All right, so go back to 2008. They throw the keys at you. You're in charge day one. Run a business. What do you do? How did you do that?
Well, thankfully, I had, while I was hustling my way through college, I managed a restaurant, a local restaurant here, Horse Feathers. It's closed now, but I managed that restaurant. So I had some management experience behind me. I was very young to be managing a restaurant, and I was going to Western. So I was coming home, and I was really only there Friday and Saturday nights. So it was hard to do that, but it worked. It worked. I found a great group of people that were responsible enough to handle it. And so it just worked. So I did have some experience, and then I taught school, and that helped. But yeah, I mean, it was hard work. And just, you know, jumped in and lived it, breathed it every day. And the rest is history.
Did you have a particular interest or passion around animals?
I've always liked animals. Okay. My grandparents owned a farm. I was very comfortable around animals. I guess I have a natural thing with dogs. Some dogs that people are afraid of, I'm not afraid of. There was a natural niche there. I never thought I would end up doing something like this, though, ever, just because first off, there aren't many jobs available with this type of work. And if they are, they're, you know, in vet offices and things like that. So this was totally not on my radar. But once I got into it, maybe the first or second year, I realized that the training I had in education actually went hand in hand. It's a lot of the same. So I used my training for teaching and trying to teach the community how to take care of our pets responsibly. So
expand upon that. Because as a former teacher, what do you mean that you utilize that training to be successful in this position?
Well, a lot of what we do at the Humane Society is reaching out and education, making sure that, you know, people are getting their pets spayed and neutered. And I'm really big on that, just because if everybody got their pets spayed and neutered, there wouldn't be a reason for a Humane Society to be around. So, you know, just educating people, you know, when you see somebody come to you and every single summer they have a litter of kittens, you know, I'll take them the first time, I'll take them the second time, the third time. Now we need to get some education in there, and you need to, you know, I mean, we can find you a low cost place to get that cat fixed so you don't ever have to do this ever again, you know. And they felt terrible about bringing their cats there, and, you know, you could just make it a lot better if you'd call some of these numbers I can give you, and we can help you out. And there's programs out there if you can't afford it, and we just push them in the right direction. So kind of like that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we did do a lot of community outreach in the beginning. So we would visit schools, and we'd do, you know, speeches, and we try to get the community to donate to us. And it was hard at first to get people to understand that there is animal control and there's the Humane Society, and animal control is funded by your taxes. So everybody is paying for animal control to run. The Humane Society is a 501c3 nonprofit. So we have no funding, no government funding, no state funding. Everything is private donation. So that's where that started with the teaching, is going out into the public and making sure that people had the right information and that they knew that we're kind of out here on our own and we need you to help us. We need you to bring us bags of food or donate your time or donate some money. And also, as I got into it, you know, we would get dogs that have heartworm. And in the past, you know, I'm not sure what they did with those dogs. I have a good idea what they did with those dogs. They probably euthanized them. But we started reaching out to our community to see if our community, we kind of put it back on the community. Like, what, how do you want us to deal with this issue? And so we would find out how much it's going to cost to treat all these heartworm dogs. And then we'd start a GoFundMe page and say, okay, we've got three heartworm dogs. It's going to cost us this much. Let's raise this money. And I was pleasantly surprised and so grateful that, you know, when we did that, the community would respond within 4 hours and we would have our money in 4 hours. And so We took that, what we learned from that, and we started, you know, doing that whenever we had a unusual case that would otherwise probably be euthanized, we would try to raise the money for it. And now we don't euthanize at all. We don't euthanize at all. I mean, we have dogs with us that have been with us for 3 or 4 years. We have dogs with us there's one dog in particular that, you know, we pretty much know that he's a lifer. He's going to stay with us forever.
That's a choice that organizationally you make.
Well, it was a hard road. When I first started in 2008, we were not a no-kill shelter. Mm-hmm. They were very high kill. And that was something that we had to kind of work for. And there was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to try to get the board to realize that, hey, guys, I can make this work. I won't drain your bank account. Just trust me. And so it wasn't my decision because there's a board that sits over me.
Gotcha.
So it wasn't my decision, but it's what I, how myself and the staff wanted to run the place. It's what we needed to do to feel good to come to work.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think I would still be there had it not been, had there not been a change. I don't think I couldn't have done it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. So you were largely advocating on behalf of moving this organization from a high kill shelter
right.
over to a no kill shelter.
Yep.
And your staff was instrumental in that as well.
Yes.
In supporting you.
Yep.
That's, I mean, I'm sure that that took years.
Yep.
Yeah. So what were some of the challenges along the way?
You know, really it was the community. They weren't used to us telling them that we're full. It's simple math. We have this many, mm-hmm. we have this many kennels. Mm-hmm. We could take that many dogs. It's simple math. So I think that was the hardest part is, dealing with that. And then we did get some backlash, cause people didn't understand. And so how we dealt with that is we would just explain to them that, you know what, every county has an animal control. And so if that's the service you're looking for, it's already there and you can use it.
Gotcha.
If you want to use our service, we use a waiting list, so we don't have to euthanize. So mm-hmm. we'll put you on the waiting list, and when there's a kennel available, we'll give you a call. That's the service that we're going to offer. So it's just, you know, you just have to stick to your guns sometime and have some faith in yourself. And
mm-hmm. did the, I would imagine, so your new shelter that you kind of mentioned has, I mean, exponentially increased your capacity, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Do you think that the having to have some tough conversations about we're full, helped the community get behind you?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have expanded our space. We've doubled it. So it's a creative setup. So there's, you know, we have 50 kennels just on the public floor. There's only 50 kennels at our current place now, and that includes our isolation in the back. But our kennels are larger. Mm-hmm. So if there are dogs that can go together, you know, we could possibly have way more than 50 dogs on the public floor at any given time. And then our cats have community rooms now, so...
Are those with the little windows
yes.
in front? Oh, I was hoping. I'm yeah. like, I could just picture a little cat like curled up in the sun or something.
Yeah. There's actually three shelves in there too, so they can.
Very cool. So speaking of that, you also mentioned that in terms of your finances, like that new building was completely separate from your normal operating.
Yes.
And you've been fundraising for that as long as I've known you.
Yes.
So talk about that a little bit.
Well, we have Bids for Barks every year. That's our biggest fundraiser mm-hmm. of the year. Those ladies are awesome. There's a group of people that go out to all the local businesses and ask for donations, and then it's a live and silent auction. Last year, they raised $100,000 in 4 hours, and that's kind of been their they've kind of done that for the last 4 years. But, you know, that started really small, too. That started at a little FOP. And the first year, we made $20,000, and we thought we were so cool.
Which is still, like, that's amazing.
That's huge.
Yeah, yeah. So we thought we were so cool with our $20,000, and we were so excited. Like, I think we went to, like, Pizza Hut, and they gave us, like, one $25 gift certificate. And we were just like, oh, my gosh. Like, you know, we're so excited. And, you know, now, 10 years later... you know, we're getting hot tubs donated and
yeah.
spa packages. 1 year we had a car. 1 year we had a vintage car that someone bought. So, it's grown.
Why? Why do you think it's grown? To what do you owe the credit for that?
I'm going to take it back to the education.
Yeah.
I think, like, getting
yeah.
the word out
yeah.
and, you know, taking every opportunity that we can to talk to people so we can let them know. Because, you know... I still run into people all the time that think that we're animal control. So I think it's just, you know, you have to get the word out there.
Mm-hmm. So when you came into the organization, did you know that? Did you know that one of the things that you were really going to be tasked with was getting the word out? Was
no.
educating the public?
No.
How did no. you figure that out?
It didn't take too long to figure out. you know, but also... You know, you talk to people out on the street, and I realized that a lot of people had no idea what the Humane Society was or where it was even located. So that kind of started that. And then when I started there, we had no fundraisers. There were no fundraisers. And so we just started fundraising like crazy.
When you say we, how big was the staff?
I have a staff of 7.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it, are there, was it that big when you started?
I had a staff of 15.
So that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
The person before me had it set up. It was really weird. They had him set up in like, 2 5-hour shifts.
Mm.
And so it was really hard for the employees to actually be able to stay there.
Yes.
Because they weren't making any money.
Right.
So we just, I just found the best ones and.
Sure.
Just a little more efficient.
Yeah.
Now, and you have a ton of volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
So that can come with its positives, mm-hmm. but also working with volunteers mm-hmm. can present some interesting challenges
sure.
too. So how, I would imagine doing so many fundraising things, you rely pretty heavy. On those
yes.
people.
Yes. We have different committees for different things.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bids for Barks committee is like the biggest. There's probably a group of 10 of them. And that's the biggest committee that we have. Some of the other fundraisers that we've done, literally it's been me and like Kelly Nate.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Pulling off a whole thing. But we have volunteers that do our adoption days. Like those are pretty active and those kind of rotate and we can have lots of different people helping and stuff like that. But some of our bigger events, like, yes, we do use volunteers, but there's a core group that organizes it, puts it together, and we won't see the other volunteers until the day of the event.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Because you can't have too many cooks in the kitchen.
Right.
Yeah. No. Somebody's going to get burned. Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah.
So yep. Have you found that you have a reliable core group over the years that you go to and they...
Yes.
They make it run.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Lynch Lender, Kelly Nate, those two ladies have been around since the beginning
mm-hmm.
For 10 years, and they help.
And they're volunteers?
They're volunteers, yes.
So in an organization and a 501c3 that relies so heavily on volunteers, how do you make sure that they stay around?
I know they do it for the animals. They do
yeah.
it. They're passionate. They're
mm-hmm.
passionate.
Mm-hmm.
So...
And I know that there are a lot of listeners who are either a part of 501c3s or are running 501c3s mm-hmm. or are thinking about running nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another reason why we wanted to bring you in to talk about those challenges and mm-hmm. to talk about maybe some of the things that you've learned along the way that can really help those people out. No matter what it is, I'm assuming that nonprofits, there are some commonalities
mm-hmm.
that some things that you've learned along the way that will be helpful to those people who are listening. And I'm assuming one of those things is retaining volunteers.
And you have to be a hustler. I mean, you have to get it. Like, you have to want it. And
mm-hmm.
you have to believe in what you're doing. You have to, because the pay is not great.
Right. You're not if you're
right.
working for a nonprofit, you're not doing it for the money.
No, you're not.
No.
No, you're not.
No. So you went from the lucrative career of teaching.
So lucrative.
to the also lucrative position of being executive director of a nonprofit.
Yep.
I get it. Teacher, 10 years.
Yep.
I get it, girl. But if you love it, it's not work.
Right.
You know, and
right.
that's what it's all about. It's not like you're going to take, okay, yeah, could you be making 6-7 figures somewhere else?
Yes.
You're a hustler. You could. You could. I've known you for 20 minutes, and I know that you could. Can you take that with you when you go? No. So
right.
It's important to do something that you believe in, important to do something that you love, and that's why people start nonprofits.
Right.
And I
must say, too, that, there has not been one day that I've woken up and been like, I do not want to go to work. And so that's why I stay. I taught school. I loved it. But I'm not going to lie. There were days that I didn't want to go to work.
What? I always
yeah.
wanted to go into my classroom every single day, 10 years. Wait, what?
I taught
Wait, what? No. Of course not.
I taught in Benton Harbor.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, you're a hustler there, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to go back to this whole idea of tough conversations. So when you started running this nonprofit, again, they throw the keys at you, you got to run something. I assume there were a lot of tough conversations that first year.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Yes.
So how did you prepare yourself for those, or how did you go into those conversations?
Jeez, I think that really you have to just stay focused on the main goal, and you got to take one day at a time, and you got to pick your battles. You know, you don't pick your battles, figure out what you need to address it, and move on. So that's what we did. We found, you know, I picked the cream of the crop. I picked from, and I have to mention this too. It's very weird that I'm able to retain my employees. You don't see that at most humane societies sure. or in the line of work that I do. So it is pretty amazing that we have, I have staff that has been with me for 10 years. So thanks, girls. Yeah. You know, you got to find like-minded people. Mm-hmm. You have to find people like you. But
I will say that one of the things I talked earlier about the Disney Institute training, and one of the things they say is people leave an organization because of the leader. People stay with an organization because of the leader. So I'm sure that that is a testament to your leadership skills.
Yes. I also learned in leadership training at one point in time that you have to have the right people on the bus and you need to make sure that they're in the right seats.
Yes.
So, you know, I take that with me too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
How do you determine if someone's in the right seat?
Well, in the line of work that I do, I mean, that can come down to a lot of different things, you know. First off, they have to be passionate about it because if they're not, it's just not going to work out. They have to like what they're doing, you know. In my line of work, if you don't like animals, it is not going to work out.
Right.
but I try to look for people, too, that are can work well with others. Some people just can't, and it's not going to work out. It's not going to work out. So I try to find people that you know, are positive minded and can work well with others. And if they have an issue with somebody, they need to not bring that to work. And I really do ask of my staff that, you know, even if you have a problem with someone, please, you know, when we're out in public, it's a unified front. And I'm very happy to say that they're very good at doing that now. And they understand what that means. I don't think they understood what that meant at first, but now they get it. So.
Yeah, I would never have gotten any sense otherwise just being out with your group of volunteers. I mean, mind you, I'm usually like on the ground with a dog or something, but you know.
Yeah, you got puppy eyes when you're at those events. You're not paying attention to that stuff.
And everyone that I'm at, I'm like texting my husband, like, look at this one, look at this one, look at this one. And he's like, yeah, that's cute. That's cute for someone else.
Right.
Like,
nah. For someone else.
I know.
Someone else is going to love that dog.
Mm-hmm. Else and can. Usually someone will.
Yes.
Yeah.
But what if they don't? What if it was me that needed to save that dog?
Well, luckily, Jill has your number.
Yeah.
I know.
Anytime.
I know. There was one. I was so happy. So rabbit hole. But Ozzy.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
He was such a sweetheart.
I was in love. This was like talk about dogs that most people are scared of.
Yeah.
Like, he was this big, beautiful pit bull.
He was blue, too. Or,
yeah. Oh, yeah. My gosh. Mm-hmm. He was beautiful. But he was very scary looking, like, to probably someone that, you know, had a misconception about pit bulls. And, oh, man.
He was a lover.
He's such a lover. And I helped prepare him for the Christmas party one year. Mm. So I gave him a bath. And then you really see that he's just like,
aww.
You guys can't see me right now, but I'm like, you know, like, wagging my tail.
She looks like a puppy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a big
so
lover.
I was happy to see him go to a home because
oh, good.
My dog unfortunately doesn't play well with other dogs. Otherwise, I take them all home.
Right.
So, anyways.
Yeah. I think taking care of dogs is way harder than taking care of children. So I can't take any home.
Sometimes it is. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is. And then other times I'm like, oh, I'll just stay at work.
So talk about that. You have dogs at home?
I do, of course.
How many?
I have three.
Mm-hmm.
I only take the hard to adopts. Like, they have to be there forever until I'll be like, all right, come on.
Aw, they just grow on you.
Yeah, I don't take the easy to adopt ones. Although someone would probably ask me how the heck I ended up with a French bulldog then, but I did, and it's because when she came in, the people turned her in, and it looked like she had ringworm on her face, and so it took us forever. Like, no one wanted her because they thought she had ringworm, and ringworm is, you know, it's contagious to kids and stuff like that. And so I was like, oh no. Well, I took a chance. And I found out that she does not have ringworm. She is allergic to the plastic food bowls.
Oh.
So I just started, like, giving her, you know, a ceramic bowl, and everything's fine.
And now she's fine.
She's fine.
Yeah, she's not. She's just.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's now, a jerk, but she's fine.
So you have three dogs. Do you have cats?
No, my husband is deathly allergic to cats.
Okay, thankfully. He, yeah, otherwise you would.
If he wasn't, we would have cats.
Yeah.
And my daughter really wants a cat.
And speaking of daughter, you also have children.
I have those too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like them.
How old are they?
I have a fourth grader and I have a first grader.
Oh.
So seven and nine.
I have 7 and 9 year olds.
Yeah, it's a fun.
I threw a 3-year-old in there too, just for fun.
Oh boy.
Mm-hmm. That's all right. She's the most chill one. She gets carted around everywhere, so she just goes with it.
Right.
Yeah. She's good. She's good to go. So, I assume you're pretty busy.
Yep, pretty busy.
How does that work with also having to run a household?
I am not gonna lie. Like, I am very lucky to have like a supportive husband. Very lucky to have a supportive husband because I don't think I could do it without him. And he doesn't give me crap about my job. And a lot of times my job just kind of, my job is a lifestyle. It's not a job. It's a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. We have all these after hour events that we have to go to. You know, we have restaurants that want to do give back nights. We have to go to those. So, you know, my 8-hour day can turn into a 16-hour day really quick. Also, I'm the person that's in charge, like if there's an emergency at the shelter, if the fire alarm goes off, if something goes off, I have to go, I have to drop everything and go. So I have to say that it helps to have a supportive partner that doesn't give me crap about that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how.
Yeah.
That's how.
Yeah.
And then I'll be honest, we work opposite shifts. So, you know, he works kind of during the nighttime and I work during the daytime. So then that way we flip flop. So somebody's always there for the kids. Like I don't have a babysitter or anything like that.
Yeah.
So,
What do the kids think about what you do?
The kids, they love what I do. They think it's great. They think it's great. They always want to go to mom's work.
Well, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Do they want to bring things home with them?
They're pretty good about that
part,
you know. I was pregnant with both of them while I worked there.
Mm.
And so, like, I think that they're just, like, used to, like, the barking.
They were literally born into it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think that they kind of just act like it's no big deal. Like, you know, most kids will be like, oh.
Yeah.
And they kind of just.
Yeah, like, whatever.
Blasé about it. I mean, not to say that they don't like our animals, because they do. And
sure.
I make them do chores with the animals.
Yes. Like, good.
Character building.
Yes. Uh-huh. I make them feed them and then I hold them accountable for, you know, messing up.
Yeah.
Make them clean up dog poop.
So talk about this big project, because, again, as Kaylee mentioned before, you know, you started in 2008 and then you've started fundraising. So talk about, like, what does it feel like to see this building go up? And then what's everything that went into this?
It's really surreal. I mean, I've been working on it for so long. Kaylee knows. I mean, you know, at first when we started fundraising, we were just fundraising to keep the dang doors open.
Yeah.
And then it turned into, oh man, like we've got some momentum. Like maybe we could like start another bank account. Maybe we could do this, you know? So at first it was like really aggressive and I was like, I'm going to do this without getting a mortgage because, you know, it's too hard to have a mortgage. So I'm going to do it. And I was really aggressive out of the gate. But I found that when you have a capital campaign that's been going on as long as ours has been, that you do start to lose momentum because your donors want to see where their funds are going.
Right.
They don't want to see them sitting in a bank account.
Right.
So we decided to step outside of our comfort zone, and we decided to go ahead and take out a mortgage and get this thing going. And once we did that, the momentum came back.
Yes.
So here we are.
Because of people seeing it as, all right, now they're making progress.
Yes.
And the seriousness happens, and then the groundbreaking happens, and then the sign goes up, and then the construction happens, and then the excitement builds, and then pretty soon there'll be a ribbon cutting.
Yep. And then naming rights go up because people see that there's going to be an opportunity there. And so right now we have a $700,000 Jaeger match. So the Jaeger family has decided that they're going to match us, and that is to help us pay off the mortgage as soon as possible.
That's fantastic.
So, that's a 2-for-1 match, too. So
that's
they started an endowment fund on our behalf as well.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was that day like when you got that
news?
Oh,
my gosh. Well, it
Did
was
you
in
go
a
to
lawyer's
Pizza
office.
Hut?
No. It was in a lawyer's office. It was very formal. Everything was written up. And it was very exciting. It was very exciting. I kind of felt like it was coming because the Yeager family has been to every Bits for Barks that we've ever done.
Sure.
So I kind of felt like they were going to do something. I didn't expect it to be that huge. So I was pleasantly surprised when I found out what the end result was going to be. So, yay!
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So how did you get through that time where your momentum starts to drop?
Mm-hmm.
You're like, I don't want to, at that time, we don't want a mortgage. We're going to fundraise this whole thing. How do you stay positive and keep not only yourself moving forward, but your staff behind you and the community moving, et cetera? Until, because there was the time before you actually did break ground.
Right, right. I knew that it was going to happen. I just knew it was going to happen. I had faith. And I had support. I mean, it wasn't just me. I mean, this building is not there just because of me. I had support. Mm-hmm. And that's what kept me going. Really, that is what kept me going, is the Lynch lenders and the Kelly Nates and the people that were helping us put these fundraisers together.
Mm-hmm.
And all the support from the community and, like, the businesses that kept donating every year to Bits for Barks. And, that's what it was. Because at one, you know, I'm sure at one point I felt like, oh my gosh, this is taking forever. Like, is it ever going to happen for us? I know I did feel like that at some point. But then I remembered that, like, all these people really want this for us. They want it for us. I'm not the only person that wants this. This mm-hmm. is not just, this is going to happen. And I just believed in it. And we just kept pushing forward. And, you know, to kind of distract myself, I stopped thinking about it for a little bit. I stopped thinking about it, and I threw myself into other things, like, I'm going to go help with any hoarding situations going on. I'm going to go help with that. Or who needs help today? I'm going to go help with that. And so I just started doing that and found different ways to kind of get over that hump, and it happened. So
it did.
That's great advice.
Yeah, sometimes you need a distraction.
You do.
Stop thinking about it.
You absolutely do. Sometimes you need to put yourself in a different situation, mm-hmm. And then things start to happen because you're not, it's like the mm-hmm. whole watch pot never boils theory, right? Like, just go focus on something else, and then this stuff back here is going to take care of itself.
And I do believe in karma. If you keep the circle positive, it'll come back around.
Right.
So I just decided that, this is getting a little heavy.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to go help somebody else right now. I'm going to go, you know what? I can do something else right now. So I'm going to go help somebody else. So I did.
Yeah.
And, it happened.
What does your day consist of as the executive director?
Well, I got to get those kids on the bus first. So that's the first step. That can be hard in the morning. I have a girl. So we get her out the door.
Preach.
We get her out the door. You know, it's like 30 degrees out and she's trying to rip her hat off her head and rip her coat off. And, you know, I'll run upstairs and open the window and put your coat back on. So after all that happens, I drive to work. And that's where my day starts. So I go in and I check in on my staff first. That's usually the first thing I do, is I make sure that they know that they're loved and that mm-hmm. there's someone that cares and I'm watching over them.
That's important.
Yeah.
I want to stop there for a second. So you're present. You're there. They know you're there and they know that you care about them.
Yeah.
Again, another sign of a leader.
Yeah, well, you have to, if you want people to, you have to care about them. Like, you have to care about them if you want them to show up to work every day. It'd be really easy for them to just not come to work. And in my situation, that would be terrible, because this isn't like we're running the gap here mm-hmm. where we could just call somebody else and someone could stand and run the cash register. You know, it's not like that. I need, like, these people have to know what they're doing. They have to be trained. I can't just throw somebody in to take care of a bunch of dogs they don't know.
Right.
And besides that, when you have a lot of animals like we do in one spot, we got to make sure that we're doing things the right way so nobody gets sick, because sickness can spread very, very easily. And then now I have to fundraise for more stuff, because that's really expensive.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to the vet?
Right.
It's really expensive.
Yes. Yes, it certainly is.
So imagine having, you know, 75 vet bills for the dogs and 100 vet bills for the cats, you know.
Sure.
So, yes, I do. That's the first thing I do, is check in with them, make sure that everything's rolling down there, make sure that they're all safe and everybody's happy, and, you know, make sure that everybody's heartworm test came back negative, not positive. Make sure I don't have any problems to worry about. And then I move on. Usually right now, my life is a little bit different because we're trying to build this building. So right now my life consists of, like, lots of meetings and things like that. Mm-hmm. I meet with Pearson all the time. I meet with my boss all the time to try to figure out what the next steps are. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
What do you think it's going to be like when you move into this new building?
I think it's going to be like a whole new world, yes. Like a whole new life. Yeah. It's going to be like starting over.
And it's hard for the listeners to understand this, right? If you're not from Southwest Michigan, where we record, it's just a huge thing here. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a huge thing that's been going up for a while. It's a big, beautiful building. And so to move from where you are to that is, I just think it's so, it's such a huge step, literally, figuratively, you know, symbolically. So, and it's a testament to all the work that you've done for the last 10 years to move you, your staff, all of those animals into a bigger space. And I'm sure there are lots of animal lovers that are listeners, so you will appreciate that.
I'm sure
that.
There are.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I think the tribe is full of animal lovers.
Yes.
I think to get a clear picture, like if anybody's bored or anything like that, they should stop by the 641 yes. South Crystal Avenue property.
I was literally thinking that.
Yeah. Because you can't even vocalize it. You have to see it. And that building is literally falling down around us. And it has been for the last 10 years. It's not like it was great when I moved into it. I mean, it was rough back then. So the whole setup is different. Like the whole setup. Like mm-hmm. the dogs can go outside now. Like they don't have to mm-hmm. pee and poop inside in their cages. They can go outside. Hmm. They can hang out outside and sun themselves.
Yeah, and they can't do that in the current building.
No.
If you are in Southwest Michigan, I would highly encourage it. Because, like, I knew, but until you see the mm-hmm. Crystal Avenue location,
yeah,
that's when you, like, really get it.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting because 10 years ago, they got to pick somebody else to run it.
Yeah.
And that person could have just maintained the status quo, right?
Yeah.
But they pick you. And then you have this vision. And all great leaders have vision, right? I mean, if we're checking off a list today, you have this vision, but not only do you have the vision, but you have the drive to push for it. So where does the drive come from?
From the first moment I walked in the door, I was like, this place needs help.
This place sucks.
This place needs help. From everything. Everything was wrong. Everything was wrong. The balance sheet was wrong. the guy that greeted me at the door was wrong. Everything was wrong. Everything was wrong. So,
but you didn't run away.
No.
I didn't.
I think, the most amazing thing.
I just, like, I don't know what, like, I felt like I was, like, being called there for some reason. I know that's cheesy. I know
it's
that's
not,
really cheesy
no.
to say, but.
So we talk about commonalities that
yeah.
all the hustlers that sit at this table talk about, and I will tell you that is a commonality.
Yeah.
I felt like, that's where I was supposed to be at that moment. My grandpa used to own a farm and the Benton Harbor Fruit Market. I don't even know if it's still there, but it used to be out there. And so we used to drive by the Humane Society every day on our way to sell our fruit. so it was a building that I was familiar with. I mean, I had seen it since I was a little kid. I had never been inside of it before that day. Never.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I know. It's just like my family, like if, you know, I grew up on a farm. So if a stray dog or a stray cat kind of came along, somebody in the family just took it in. So I guess I never utilized their services, you know? Yeah. And because that was happening, because I lived on a farm, we never were in need of adopting a dog or a cat
because sure.
there was always one around.
Right.
So yeah, I don't know. I just felt like it was a calling. I felt like I was supposed to be there. I mm-hmm. felt like it was so wrong, but it was so right. I don't know.
Yeah. What's the conversation that you have at home that night? You go home, you say, all right, I'm the new executive director. They just threw some keys at me. I got this shitty building where everything's wrong. The balance sheet is wrong. And hey, hubby, how's it going? Right? So what's that conversation?
I think when I came home, it was more of like, oh, shit. I think that was like, oh, shit. But, like I said, he's very supportive.
Yes.
So he's like, you can do this. Yeah. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
You taught school at Calvin Britton, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You've been hit and right. spit on and kicked.
Right.
At least this is animals, not human spit.
Right.
So
right.
It's
you've,
fine.
You've been bit before by yeah. children. This yeah. is, this will be nothing.
It's fine, you know? And so, I had a lot of help. Even my father-in-law, like, helped me paint. He did the paint job. Like, I was like, ugh. And so he, like, mm-hmm. like... Well, I'll help you out, Jill. Like, let's paint it up a little bit. Maybe it'll make you feel a little better. I'm like, okay, you know, maybe it'll make the staff feel a little bit better. And so, you know, he even donated his time. And then, back in the beginning, A&J Hardware out of Baroda, like, donated the paint. So, you know, we started on a good foot.
Yeah.
You know, and what I've learned along the way is sometimes all you have to do is ask. I know that asking is hard sometimes, and mm-hmm. sometimes I'm like, oh, I feel like I'm asking, I'm begging all the time because of my job. And I am. But, you know, sometimes you just have to ask. Like, people want to say yes, you know? They
want you to give them a reason to say yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you give them a good reason, they yeah. feel good about saying yes.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, I think that's a great thing for those listeners out there who are running nonprofits, considering mm-hmm. starting a nonprofit. What are some other tips? So, if you got a young girl coming to you saying, all right, I got to run this nonprofit. What should I do? Like, what from the ground running, what are the things I need to be taking care of or making sure that I do?
Well, I would definitely encourage them to take a long glance around and decide, do I want to keep it the way it is? Is this good? Is this good? Or do I want to, like, start something from scratch? And if you do want to start something from scratch, it's going to be a hard road. Like, it's going to be a hard road, and you're going to have to want it. You're going to go home and cry sometimes, but you're going to have to want it, and you're going to have to go find some support. If you are a nonprofit, I assume that you're going to need donations. So you need to find some businesses that will back you, and you call those your angels, and you need to establish those right away, right off the bat, and it'll make your life a little bit easier. And then, you know, you can decide how you want to break down the infrastructure if you want to do that, you know. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it's a lot of work. If you want to do nonprofit, your heart really has to be mm-hmm. in the right place.
Yeah, it's a heart business.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
I know. I always leave inspired. I mean, Sarah, a month ago had yeah. me wanting to be a nurse.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking,
how
like,
you want to go take care of dogs,
I
don't
do.
You?
I really love dogs. Actually, I could never be a nurse. So, like, she was pulling at my heart, but
right.
Mad respect. Can't yeah. do it.
I want to go, my last question before we start to wrap up here a little bit. We haven't really talked much about you pre Humane Society.
Oh, okay.
All right. So yeah. You're a passionate person. You're a driven person. You're obviously a hustler. Where does that come from? Have you always been that way?
I think so. I mean, I don't know. I think growing up on a farm and, like, your grandparents using you as the help, probably, like.
You weren't afraid of hard work.
Right. I mean, you know. Everybody was out in the field. Everybody had to pick. So mm-hmm. that's what we did. So I think it started there. I don't think a lot of people get that experience.
Not these days.
So it started there. And then, you know, my parents held me very accountable. They both worked full time. And so at a very young age, my dad traveled for work. So there was a lot of times that, you know, I would come home from school and there was nobody there. So, you know, at a young age, I learned how to take care of myself quickly. Not that my parents weren't there, didn't help
sure,
me.
Sure.
It's just, you know, they put more responsibility onto me. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, that kind of helps from the beginning. And then, you know, who doesn't want to do something? Who doesn't want to do something? I knew I was never going to be, like, cut out for, like, the office job. Like, I knew that wasn't going to fit my fancy. I needed to be moving. I needed to do something. I like my job because every day is different. Mm-hmm. I really do like that part. I don't know.
I think those are good answers.
I mean, mm-hmm. I've always worked. I guess that would be another thing, too, is, like, I've always worked. I've never not had a job. Like, I started my first job. Well, my first job was probably in the fields. But after that, I worked at a bakery at the age of 15. I got my first job at a bakery. And if anybody knows anything about bakeries, like, you know, it's kind of a rough.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be up yeah. at like 4 o'clock in the morning, yeah. time to make the donuts, you know, that yeah. kind of thing. So it started there. And, you know, my parents held me accountable. So, you know, I you know, if I went out and I stayed out too late with my friends or something like that, like I was getting in trouble in three different ways. You know, the boss was mad at me, my mom's mad at me, my dad's mad at me, everybody's mad, you know. And so, you know, I didn't like that feeling. So I became accountable at a young age because I didn't want to feel like that. So started my first job as bakery. And then after that, I kind of, I waited tables through college because it was easy for me to only work 2 days a week instead of seven. So I figured that out quickly.
Yes.
That, oh, if I wait tables, I only have to work 2 days a week instead of five. And correct. I can focus on my studies and I can get through school faster. So that's what I did. I took spring and summer courses to get through quicker.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Would you describe yourself as efficient?
Efficient? Yes.
Yes. Hustlers are efficient.
Very.
Again, commonalities. Efficient. Start working early. Accountable. Like, those are all the things. So, listeners, if you're thinking, all right, what do I got to do to be a hustler? That shit. That's the shit you got to do. You got to start early. You got to work hard. You got to be efficient. You got to love what you do. And you have to have a passion for it.
Yep. So and you got to figure out what that passion is.
And if you don't have a passion for it, you're doing the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. You got to figure out what the right thing is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And don't be afraid to be weird or different or not fit into the crowd. Don't be afraid of that. Because sometimes when I have two kids, and sometimes I feel like our parenting style is so much different than everyone else's. But that's okay.
What do you mean by that?
You don't have to follow the crowd all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Be a leader. You don't have to follow the crowd all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I discipline my kids. I do. And I hold them accountable. And I don't coddle them. If there's an issue at school, I talk to my daughter, but I don't automatically, you know, if she's like, so-and-so did this, I don't automatically believe that so-and-so did this. I want to know, I want to know what did you do? Like, what, you know, where are you?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, don't be afraid to be weird or follow your heart. Or if you know that something's right, follow it. Even if somebody else or even if the whole world is doing something else, just, you know, sometimes you got to follow your heart and you have to believe in yourself.
Yeah. And be confident in who you are and what your decisions are. And
be okay with it.
And be okay with it. And put your damn heels on and walk away from it.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to be the first person to walk out of line.
Yeah.
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 Great advice. So much easier said than done. I think
it is.
For a lot of people, it is. That's another commonality is that we all, like everyone is going to struggle with that at some point in your life. So if you're listening and that's hard for you, that's okay. Practice.
You'll get there.
Yeah.
I think it comes with age.
You know, everyone keeps telling me that. Older you get, the better.
I tell Kaylee that all the time. She's such a baby.
I think it comes with age.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you would have asked me that question like 10 years ago, I would have never just said what I said. Mm-hmm. Ever.
Can I ask how old?
38.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll be 37 soon.
Yeah.
So I feel like a kindred connection with you because I feel the same way. Mm-hmm. Like at this point in my life, I know what I know, and I know what I need to do in order to fall asleep at night and feel good about myself.
Right.
And that's my goal every day, to be able to go to bed with a clear conscience and put my head on that pillow and say, I did what I thought was right.
Right.
And if people have a problem with it, they got a problem with it. Like, lions can't lose sleep over the opinions of sheep.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like, so it's just, it is what it is. It's going to be what it's going to be. And and we move on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always try to stay fair. Fair is fair. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter how you get there, fair is fair. So always stay fair. And, you know, no one knows what's best for your kids better than you. So.
Yeah.
Right.
And I love that you brought up the kid scenario because I live in a neighborhood with lots of children. With lots of children comes so many benefits, right? My kids, as soon as they get home, now that the weather has changed, as soon as they get home, they are on their bikes and they are gone. They are gone. Like they play outside like it's old school 1985. Yep. They're gone until it's, you know, time for when mama says come home.
Right.
With that comes opportunities for them to figure out their own shit.
Yes.
And if there are 15 kids playing a ball game, you better believe that there are going to be fights, as there were yesterday.
Yeah.
Now, some parents might get super involved. Not me. And I feel like I'm one of the only ones that doesn't get involved.
I am the same. I do not get involved.
Do you know what my advice is? Figure it out.
That's what my advice is, too.
Figure it out. Like, mommy is not coming to the field to make sure that everybody's playing fair. Did that kid call your name? That kid pushed you? What do you want me to do about that? You're going to have to figure out if it is worth it to stand on your own two feet and stand up for yourself. And if you don't want to stand up for yourself, you're going to get knocked down again. Until you're ready to stand up for yourself, then it's not going to happen again. But mommy's not coming out there. So you're going to have to figure it out. I don't care how many tears are coming down your face. You're going to have to figure it out.
That's what I meant by don't be afraid to be weird.
And but I feel like I'm one of the only
parents
that feels
that way. Maybe we should live in the same neighborhood.
We should live in the same neighborhood.
Because
you know what? You know what's going to happen? Those kids are going to play together tomorrow.
Yep.
Because they're kids.
Yep.
And that's where they have to if you don't figure out the societal rules on the playground or in my field where you're all playing ball, if you don't figure them out then, you're not going to know them when you're an adult and you're going to have some issues.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, then you're going to think that life should be fair and I need someone to step in and help me, whereas you should have figured out back then how to handle your own shit.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And again, that sounds harsh for a 9 and 7-year-old to figure out your own shit, but you know what? You got to if
they
you want
to
be successful.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit old school.
It all sounds like great advice.
I'm totally old school.
You're going to have to write all that down so that once, you know, in like a decade, I have a 5-year-old or whatever, I'll know what to do.
You're
going to
call me as my kids are like going off to college. I'm going to be like, Kaylee, it's real easy. This makes it very easy for you. Tell them to figure it out.
Yeah.
The end. The end. So I love that you brought that up because I was feeling that same way yesterday.
I know. And sometimes you feel like a big weirdo, but it's okay. That feeling will pass, and you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. And we'll raise fantastic children.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That will then raise good children.
Other good children.
The cycle will continue.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. Is there anything that we didn't ask you that you want people to know about? Like any events that might be coming up?
Yes. Really fun event coming up April 28th. It's sponsored by Honor Credit Union, Charcuterie Festival, Watermark. It's going to be fun. It's basically, people are probably like, what's a charcuterie festival?
I might have said the same thing.
Yeah.
when I first learned of it. It is cool, though.
It's cool. Basically, it's a beer and wine fest, okay?
Yeah.
And we have bites available, and we have some of the biggest names coming, and Toasties will be there. Grand Mirror will be there. It's great. It's $50 for a ticket. But the great thing about that is that $50 goes directly back to the animals.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So cool.
Watermark is so generous.
They really are.
I love Watermark.
They're a great community partner.
Yep.
I might have had a beer at Watermark before we started recording tonight.
That's great.
Maybe two.
Yep.
Oh,
they give back, so thank you for supporting their business because they give back.
Well, we started early at our training, and then I had about a half an hour before, and we might have stopped there. And just, I mean, we wanted to support them.
Yeah,
They have this fantastic coffee beer.
Oh, I haven't tried that.
Oh my god,
it's new. I think
it is so unbelievable. Okay. So Watermark, all of their beer is fantastic. I mean, all of it. So huge supporter of Watermark, but that coffee beer.
I'm going to have to try that next time.
Oh, my gosh. So good. So,
well, I guess I should expand on that. The $50 ticket includes 4 food taste tickets and 8 beer, wine taste tokens.
You get a ton with $50.
Yeah, because we're really generous.
Yeah.
What's really cool about our beer fest is that we only sell 400 tickets.
Yeah.
So you're not slammed in there like sardines and you don't have to wait.
But there's still tickets available.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
How can one get one?
Just on our website, humanesocietyswm.org. Tickets are still on sale for Bids for Barks as well. I think we have about 5 tables left, and that's going to be at the LMC Mendel Center this year on May 19th. But if you've never been to this charcuterie festival, I want to go back to the charcuterie festival.
When is it again?
It's April 28th, and it's from noon to 4. So I think it's like a perfect time. We did it last year. We raised over $16,000 in our first year. It was awesome. It was just awesome.
Well, Watermark's a fantastic
location.
I will be there.
Yes.
I'll be live
entertainment.
I'll be there.
Yeah.
We'll be there.
Yeah.
We should do a live broadcast.
You should.
Oh, that'd be fun.
You should. Yes, we close down the street. Here, now I'm going to give you all kinds of information. We close down the street. I bought this circus tent a long time ago, so we have this huge circus tent.
You,
it's literally a circus tent.
You own that circus tent?
I bought it. Done. Bought it.
It's probably paid for itself, though.
It has paid for itself. the first event.
Wow.
So yeah, I bought that tent. And I thought
I had no idea. I thought you rent it every time.
No, I thought it was a good investment. Yeah. I did rent it for a couple times, and then that business was getting ready to sell.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh,
hey, I'll take it. Hey, yeah.
Can you sell me that? So they gave me a great deal on a tent. So I have a big circus tent. So we closed down the street right in front of the Watermark, and we've got wineries, breweries, eateries.
I'm excited.
Live music.
Mm.
I mean, it's the best of the best.
Yes.
It really is.
Buying a ticket.
Yeah.
And everyone wants to get outside.
Yeah.
We've been inside all winter.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Late April. It's perfect. Even if it's a little chilly, I will bundle up and
I'm excited. You know, last year it was perfect.
It was pretty nice last year.
Yeah. I had, I was wearing jeans and I had like a thermal shirt underneath, but I had my Humane Society sweatshirt on and I was fine. A couple of these.
You're good.
You're good.
You're fine.
You're good.
Yeah.
Wow.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining
us. Oh, yeah, no problem.
You very, very inspiring and a lot of good information, I think, and good advice for those who are in the nonprofit realm and who are animal lovers, as Kaylee is. I'm a little bit challenged in that department, but
that's all right.
I know my limits, so I will support with my dollars.
There you go.
But that's
come to an event.
Exactly.
Have fun.
There are so many other ways to support than adopting an animal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you'd be surprised how many people you probably know at the Charcuterie Festival.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like it's the coolest place to be.
It is.
On April 28th, it is the coolest place to be.
12 to 4.
12 to 4.
If it's at Watermark, it's cool.
Right.
Sorry.
And it's 12 to 4, so I mean, you still have the whole evening to do whatever you want.
You can sleep in.
Go home to sleep. That's what Kaylee's going to do after drinking.
I know. I'm so boring. It's fine. Like, you know what, though? I'm fine with it because I rarely wake up with a hangover.
Yeah.
I get my fun in during the day. I get a nice dinner.
I enjoy day drinking.
Yeah. And then I go to bed at a really decent
10
time.
10 o'clock.
And I wake up feeling fantastic.
You can go for a run in the morning.
I actually usually do.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep. I'm a
As
fan.
As you get older, though, if you do the night drinking.
It's
the,
awful.
Yeah, the hangover
It takes
happens.
Like 3 days to catch up.
Y'all just got to practice.
I am going to Chicago this weekend. And I am scared that that's going to happen to me.
You just got
to
practice.
And, well, I'm going with younger gals.
See,
they're younger
is
than me.
Like,
so.
You're going to get pressured to stay out really late.
I'm going to be the old lady.
You know what helps with that? Shots.
I feel like that's going to kill me.
Right.
I mean, I feel like that's going to be a hangover and a rough train ride home.
Well, it is the key to survive the night. The next morning is questionable. Just stay hydrated.
Water and 2 Advil before you go to bed. That's a requirement.
Yep.
Before you go to bed, an entire bottle of water and 2 Advil.
My boss swears on coffee. Coffee after he drinks.
Really?
Yeah.
Like before he goes to bed?
Yeah.
Oh.
I know,
gosh.
Right?
I feel like that'll just, like,
I know.
Let's just get it over with.
I learned this on a work trip one time, and I'm like, it's so counterintuitive to everything I've ever, like, thought. Coffee before I go to bed, but.
Well, at that point, you're so tired.
That's true.
I don't feel like the coffee is going to hinder the sleep.
I can pretty much drink coffee any time of the day anyways.
Yeah,
but...
me too. I've had way too much today.
So, coffee. Fried food, anything.
Yeah.
I should be excited
for
my Chicago trip.
You should be.
Terrified.
No, you'll have fun.
No,
don't be.
Kidding.
Push
you'll
through.
You'll have fun.
Push through it.
But I am going with like.
I get like that before I go anywhere.
Group.
Like, because I'm kind of a homebody. Like, I really like staycations.
Yeah.
But then once I'm there, like once I'm actually somewhere, mm-hmm. I'm like.
Well, I just went to Chicago with my husband like a couple weeks ago. We had a great time because we're old.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get our Garrett's popcorn.
Yeah.
In bed by 10.
We were. And we felt so lame because.
It's amazing.
He wanted to like, he calls his buddy that lives there like, hey, man, let's hang out. You know, by the time his buddy got a hold of us, because they're an hour, you know, and by the time his buddy got a hold of us, we were like sleeping. Lame. Totally. Totally lame.
I don't think it's lame.
No,
I think
I don't
it's
either.
you know your limits. You recognize
the
time of day that works best for you and you just live that.
I did tell him, like, if we eat this deep dish pizza.
Oh, you went to Giordano's?
You know,
I
love Giordano's, but I heard that I needed to try Lou Malnati's.
Oh,
so I did.
Okay.
I did. You know, you really can't compare them. You know, they're both good, but two different things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Good to know.
I I love a good girls trip to Chicago, though.
Yeah.
My dad doesn't normally let me go, though. No. I know I'm 36, but my dad doesn't like when I go.
Because he knows you're all about those shots to keep you up.
Shots. I blame my girlfriends. It's not me. I'm not the one ordering them.
Of course not.
The next time you guys go to Chicago, I don't know if you guys have ever tried the Virgin Hotels, the Richard Branson. Oh my gosh, so fun, so unique.
Yeah,
that's where. Yeah, like I stayed I stayed there with my husband last weekend on a whim. Mm-hmm. We actually had like two hotel rooms going on. Mm-hmm. I don't know what was going on with that. I got a good deal on one of them, so I was like, yeah, let's run over here and try this out. So we go over to the Virgin. I'd never stayed there before, but I've walked by it and I've always thought, oh, that looks really cool. So we try it out, and it was so different. It was like a boutique hotel, totally different. And right when I walked in, I think I offended him a little bit because I was like, now this is the place that you bring your girlfriends.
And your husband's like, cool.
Awesome. Thanks.
He's like, what? I like it.
Yeah, whatever. Scoping it out for a couple weeks from now.
And then I booked it for like 2 weeks later. Yeah.
I'm not sure I remember that. I've not stayed there.
I haven't either.
Yeah, it's a cool little place. It's different. A new approach.
Huh. Yeah, very cool.
Well, we like to end our segments. We're ending with something different this time instead of I know we didn't do social share last week, and we decided to do something a little bit different. Mm-hmm. A question that we put out on social and some answers from some of our listeners. So the question that we put out was, what are your motivating factors? Have you found your why? So what's your why? And we had quite a few of you. So Candace, I love this girl. She likes our stuff, comments mm-hmm. on our stuff. She works in home care, and her why always comes back to, why not help these people stay at home regardless of where they live? Not everyone has a home like me, so she supports them 100%. So I loved that, Candace. Mm-hmm. Daniela says inclusion. She wants to build a community that brings women, specifically mothers, together. She doesn't think it's often said that motherhood can feel lonely, for sure. For sure. Especially those early years. Holy shit. Mm-hmm. When you're at home with your babies by yourself, and if you're nursing and doing, I mean, super lonely. So she wants to hold a place at the table for every mom. So she thought that the most powerful statement she's found in this entire process is, you too? I thought I was the only one. So I thought that was a really cool one. Ashley, she's a yoga teacher. Her why is to bring more balance into these crazy lives we live. And then she says, love you, ladies. Keep it up, with some champagne glasses. So thanks, Ashley. Mackenzie, we got to be friends because I'm loving all of your posts. She says recognition. That's her why. She works in a male-dominated industry, so recognition is a huge motivating factor for her. She's been able to become successful by being a game changer amongst mostly all men. So she views success in terms of fulfillment and gratification, not just money. Everybody wants something bigger, but her career is coming to mean a lot more to her than just a living. So I love that. And Loyetta, I hope I said that wrong. Her why is to provide the community with some finest dental care with genuine enthusiasm, warmth, and commitment to quality. And this is what I want to end on, because love this part. She likes to show her daughters what a strong, hardworking woman can accomplish by following her passion.
Well, if that's not fitting or what.
Right? So, hey, thanks, listeners. Like, we love engaging with you on social. Mm-hmm. We love that you are engaging back with us. We're trying to build this tribe of inclusion, not exclusion. And I think we're on the right track. Mm-hmm. We want more of you in our tribe, so feel free to share with those who you love. Feel free to share with your girls, and keep hustling.
Yep. Comment on our stuff, too, because that's how we know that you do like what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. And subscribe.
Or not, you know.
Subscribe, give us a rating, like, comments, all that kind of good stuff. And we'll have more information about our merch. Our guests, they get to take the wine glasses home, but we know some of you guys are interested in purchasing some wine glasses. That's pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
So we'll put some information out there on our website and on Facebook. So thanks for joining us again, ladies. And keep hustling.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Hustlin' and Heels is an NBI Studios production. Your hosts are Stacey Carlin and Kaylee Gaines. And all views and opinions expressed on the shows are theirs and theirs alone. Your executive producer is Michael Bussing, and all music and artwork for the show was created by Shane Yoder with PutThemInASong.com. You can follow along with Stacey and Kaylee on all forms of social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at HIHpod. And you can also send the show an email to letschat@hihpod.com. Feel free to write into the ladies if you're hustling in heels, tennis shoes, work boots, slippers, socks, or barefoot. If you've got a question, comment, or to suggest a guest, or even if you'd like to be a part of the show. That's all we have today, so make sure you tune in next Wednesday at 6 a.m. Eastern Time for our next episode. But until then, keep on hustling, ladies.